Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the West Side, Best Side. Man, we got a lot to get to. Hopefully you are having a spectacular day, whether it's the end of your summer, the beginning of the fall. Football essentially back. Week zero in college football. Kirk Ferentz, head coach of Iowa, will join us later on the show. Matter of fact, 1 hour from right now, T-minus 1 hour. 1 hour from right now, Kirk Ferentz, Iowa, will join us. Kind of a, like a bi-yearly visit, right? He usually comes on with us sometime before the season, middle of the season. He was ranked as both, one of the most underrated and overrated coaches as well in college football. The Bus, Jerome Bettis, Hall of Famer, Pittsburgh Steelers, also an L.A. Ram, will join us in about a half hour. Mike Schlitt, who's the Cardinals' new manager. The St. Louis Cardinals sitting there right in the hunt, especially with the Dodgers. Wah! Spitting up all over themselves. Kenley Jansen gives up two home runs last night. He is that's the first time he's done that in an inning since 2013. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's the seventh Dodger pitcher to take an L in the last 10 games. Wow. Daniel Jeremiah will join us later on in the show. You see him on the NFL Network, and if you listen to Charger games, you hear him as well. We'll get his thoughts on my take on Andrew Luck. So we saw Andrew Luck and really kind of dug in last night and watched him against the Baltimore Ravens. First, let's hear from Andrew Luck as to his thoughts on how he played.
Not very well, but it was fun. It was a good chance to be out in front of the home crowd. We've certainly got a lot of things to work on as a team, and that's the beauty of it. I know personally, I feel like I've got a lot of things to work on. And at the same time, we did some good things, and if we continue to improve every day as a team and as individual players, we'll be all right.
It's been less than 2 months since Andrew Luck started throwing the Duke, the official football of the National Football League. So the what happens here is we lose all track, all perspective. And I understand that there is some pushback against Andrew Luck. No, he has not won a Super Bowl. Yes, his coach did get fired, and he was kind of a high turnover guy. But there is a sense from some that when he signed his contract extension, he became the highest paid player at the time in the National Football League, that he hadn't lived up to his lofty expectations. I find that laughable if you actually dig in and look. You know, I mean, his number two wide receiver was Reggie Wayne when he had 40 touchdown passes a couple years ago. The peak of Andrew Luck, his third year in the National Football League. Team won 11 games, went to the AFC Championship game. Reggie Wayne was at 36 years old, their second best wide receiver, and Trent Richardson was his star running back. That's what I got for you. So to throw 40 touchdown passes in and of itself is spectacular. To do it with that as your second and third option to T.Y. Hilton. And to do so with Chuck Pagano, who, come on, man, Chuck Pagano is not a great head coach. I think we know that. Right? Chuck Pagano is one of those guys, good coordinator, good defensive guy. Had he not gotten cancer, would have been fired a year or two earlier. That's just the reality of it. Or had he not gotten cancer and simply taken a leave of absence for any other health issue, probably doesn't get his job back. But instead, he does. And Pagano appeared to be in over his head. So did Ryan Grigson, their general manager. It was an absolute mess. And now he's dealing with, they're at a talent deficiency in comparison to other teams in the NFL. They've tried to reboot the line. He did seem to figure out that Jack Doyle is a guy as a tight end that he can find. But for the most part, he's playing with T.Y. Hilton when healthy and not a whole lot else. But maybe it's because of the money he signed for. Maybe it's because he was the number one overall pick and people thought that when you're that highly touted, you immediately hit the ground running and win a Super Bowl. That hasn't happened for anybody that's been on a really bad team. Like, look, let's have some, we have zero perspective. Zero. If you want to tell me that Ben Roethlisberger was 15-1 when he was a rookie, that's fine. Ben Roethlisberger was on a really good team. Really good team. And by the way, when Ben Roethlisberger won the Super Bowl his first time around, he had the lowest quarterback rating as a Super Bowl winning quarterback in the history of the sport. Okay? So the idea that they didn't win it because of, they won it in spite of Ben Roethlisberger. If you want to tell me that Aaron Rodgers is better than Andrew Luck, that's fine. But Aaron Rodgers didn't play his first couple years. And remember, his first year taking over for Brett Favre. Remember, Brett Favre lost to the Green Bay Packers, lost to the New York Giants at home in the snow in the playoffs. Retires. Next year, Aaron Rodgers takes over. And I believe Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the sport. Didn't make the playoffs. Bunch of close losses. Many of them because his defense stunk. But he was actually on a good team. When Tom Brady took over, after sitting, it was only after Drew Bledsoe, who was on a good team, got hurt. All these other guys that are number one overall picks, it took a year or two. It didn't take Andrew Luck a year or two. He took over the worst team in football, made them a playoff team. 33 games, first 3 years, and they finished in the AFC Championship game, losing to the Patriots. Were they great? No. Were they better than they should have been because of Luck? Yes. So you can argue with me all you want about how great he was or how good he was or how he's progressing. First 3 years, it was great. Offensive line was in shambles. Then he gets hurt, plays hurt, and still finds a way to be solid. 8-7 in his last year, playing with what most people believe was a torn labrum at the time. Take a listen to what Tiger Woods said earlier today about playing in through his rehab.
To go through what I've gone through, I didn't know I was going to play last year. I mean, I didn't know if I'd ever play again. I was hoping just to be able to play golf with my kids and with my buddies at home. I wasn't thinking about the tour. And now here I'm contending in major championships. And I've had a chance to win a couple major championships.
Yeah. So we have to have perspective on Andrew Luck, who we didn't know if he ever played football again. He hadn't played for 2 years. He just started touching the Duke 2 months ago. And now all of a sudden, there's these lofty expectations. He did not play well last night. He was not sharp. They did not protect him, nor was anybody running wide and free and open. But you have to have perspective on where he was and where he is now and the possibility of where he can go. And you got to have clear perspective on what's around him. Because the answer to this point is not a whole hell of a lot. So look, I watched four quarterbacks last night. Luck looked rusty as hell and a little bit overwhelmed by the speed and uncomfortable behind that offensive line. Jacoby Brissett looked like a quality backup who could be a starter. Joe Flacco was probably the best quarterback last night. And Lamar Jackson, kudos to Booger McFarland for saying what we have all said and he gives credence to, which is he's just not accurate enough to be an NFL quarterback right now. Period, stop. You can marvel at his athleticism. You can have great wonder for when he does throw a strike in the end zone for a touchdown. But the reality of it is, he's so erratic that he's going to get you beat, and he moves so much and runs so often that he's going to get himself hurt. He's just not an NFL quarterback yet. Will he be? We'll see how he develops.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The Cards were dead. Weren't the Cards dead and buried? Wasn't this like right? Didn't that happen? That was this year, wasn't it? And then I guess it didn't happen. That's kind of the best way. Out tonight at Chavez Ravine, where the Dodgers cannot close out a game. They're looking up not only in the NL West standings, but they're looking up in the wild card standings at the St. Louis Cardinals, who two home runs off of Kenley Jansen. That's the first time he's given up two home runs in an inning since 2013. That's a wow. That's a wow. They won 3 of 4, but you go back and they had a win streak. What was it that they won? It was like 8 in a row, right? 8 in a row. As they won, I think it's like 11 out of the last 13 games. That's what's happened with the Cards. And I guess you could give credit to the players or you could give credit to the managerial change. And it's Mike Shield joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Like, how much credit would you like us to give you for this massive turnaround in St. Louis?
Well, Doug, pleasure to be with you, and I would take zero credit for that, the turnaround that's taking place and the way the guys are playing. I mean, I don't throw a fish. I don't hit a ball. I don't catch a ball. Clearly don't run the bases, so they're the ones doing the work, and they're the ones out there competing, and they're the ones that are bringing home the games.
All right, for a guy who's been in minor league baseball as a manager, to be managing not just the St. Louis Cardinals, one of the iconic franchises in the sport, but also like last night to win a game in the way in which you won a game at Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium off Kenley Jansen, what's that feeling like?
It's an amazing blessing. It's really surreal for sure. You know, it's beyond my personal wildest dreams. And again, just couldn't be more humble about, you know, being a part of it and just appreciating it and love being with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Are we allowed to say that Matt's coming back to the Cardinals? I don't know. I know it's been reported as a trade, but I don't know the legalities. Let's just do it this way. There are reports that a former Cardinal is coming back to the Cardinals. I know you've heard those reports. Without naming names on those reports, what's your reaction to those alleged reports?
Well, I think we can make it official. Matt Adams will be back with us and coming home and had Matt as a rookie in Johnson City, Tennessee in 2009, and thrilled to have him back with the Cardinals. As I know our fans in our clubhouse is tickled to have him back.
What have the conversations been like with the guys in the front office in terms of, hey, Mike, what do you need here to make this final push? How much have they involved you in this final decision-making?
You know, John Mazalek, our president of baseball operations, and Mike Gersh, our general manager, we've always been in good communication, and you know, they clearly have their jobs to do, and they're good to give feedback, and we have communication about what that looks like. But you know, ultimately, they've done this and done it well for a period of time, and I trust what they think and do, and you know, they've done a great job of restructuring our bullpen and making some moves, and then you know, now adding Matt Adams is you know, a real threat, either in the lineup or off the bench from the left side, is a great addition.
What's that conversation like when John Mozeliak said that you're going to be the interim guy when Mike was let go? I mean, you're added to the major league staff about a year ago. What's that conversation like for you?
It's really bittersweet. You know, I mean, well, Mike put me on the staff and has always been really good to me. And, you know, he's provided opportunity for me and you know, really did a nice job for a number of years in this organization, won a lot of games and went to postseason. And, you know, the front office side, the change needed to be made. So, you know, initially it was disappointment because, you know, you're on a staff and you feel like you let the person down that you're working for. And, but then they provide an opportunity for me that, was appreciated. They considered that and, you know, I was excited to do the best I can for him, like any job I've ever had in this organization. And so it's, again, very humbling.
When you're in that skipper's office, and you've been to most Major League Baseball locker rooms, they have that kind of skipper's office in there. Does it feel like yours? I mean, I wonder what that. I'll give you the example. I never made it to the NBA, but I remember being on a summer league team with the Lakers, and you come in and you want to say, "All right, I'm going to be balanced. I'm not going to make this team." And you keep walking past these signs, and there's a picture of Kareem and a picture of Magic and a picture of, and you're like, "All right, that's fine. That's not going to be me." And then you're in there a couple weeks. You're like, "You know what? I could do this." And then I remember at the very end of summer league, like Mitch Kupchak's like, "Hey man, thanks so much, but we're not going to keep you. We're not going to bring you to vet camp." And I was crestfallen, but I think I was more crestfallen because I allowed myself for a second to feel like it was real and I was going to stay. Where are you in that progress?
Well, I can relate to what you're saying, Doug. You know, at home, you know, you go in and in the office at home, and you know, clearly it's you know, I'm just using it right now. But you know, you got pictures of Brett Shane East and Whitey Herzog and Tony La Russa, Hall of Fame managers, and you know, we're here in Dodger Stadium, and in the manager's office, you have all Hall of Fame managers. So you add to that list I just mentioned, and you add Earl Weaver and Parky Anderson and Tommy Lasorda, and, you know, the list goes on, all the great managers. And, you know, of course, here with the historic ballpark, you know, you're sitting in an office where a lot of great managers have been. And, you know, so it's, again, it's surreal, and you're appreciative of it. And, you know, ultimately just do your best every day to prepare the guys and trust what you do. And you know, just go do, you know, still the game of baseball, you know. And what happens beyond today, I got no control of, but I can sure give it our best today.
Mike, Matt Carpenter, he obviously struggled until last night, struggled a little bit here in August, but in July, and I mean the turnaround in on-base percentage and the numbers since the All-Star break, I mean, July, he was amazing. As a guy who, you know, obviously you mentioned Johnson City and helping and managing clubs in the Cardinals farm system, what you know his background, you know all the things he does to a baseball. What's changed? What's he fixed since the All-Star break?
You know, I don't think he's changed a whole lot, Doug. You know, I've known this guy for a long period of time. I've had the utmost respect of Matt and his work ethic and the road he's taken to get where he is, and I've been able to see it, you know, for a fair amount of time now. I talk about a guy who's a fifth-year senior sign out of TCU and, you know, comes into a minor league system and, you know, knows he's got to earn his way the whole way, and, you know, any hiccup, and he's you know, he's might be on the outside looking in, and, you know, he just got after it. And I remember going to his first big league camp, and I believe that was 2010, and seeing him, and, you know, this guy was, I mean, super hungry, working there really early, staying late the whole day, taking advantage of opportunity, and, you know, as he breaks into the big leagues, and, you know, you look at this guy, he continues to evolve and his game, and, you know, he's working on his game, looking to be a more consistent hitter, looking to drive the ball. I mean, every year he's trying to add something to his game, and, you know, he's played at an elite level for a while now, been an all-star, and, you know, been an MVP consideration in the past. So, you know, him doing what he's doing is not a big surprise, really. And probably the bigger surprise was, you know, he just, you know, struggled a little bit early. And I say struggle, and really that's not even accurate, because if you look at some of the metrics, he was, you know, he's having a lot of tough luck, and this game can be frustrating. He's putting good swings in the ball, just wasn't getting the results. And so I don't know if he changed anything. He just continued to get back to what he was doing and believing in himself, and then his talent came out.
Mike Shields, who's the interim manager for the red-hot St. Louis Cardinals, joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. You mentioned and harken back to all those days in the minor leagues. All right, give me your best, cleanest, it's got to be clean, relatively clean, minor league story. Go.
Oh, man, that's too hard. There's so many of them. They're all mostly clean, too, by the way. But, yeah, we were talking last night, and, you know, there's always something you see that you never seen before in a game, and put it in one story is kind of difficult, but great opportunity. And for the, you know, years I was in the minor leagues and managing, and people I came across with, and, you know, not really a story, but one thing you appreciate is just the level of commitment these players have to their craft and the sacrifices they make, because, you know, they're clearly not doing it for money there, and you know, that's a grueling long road, you know, going through those minor league cities and travel, and so I don't begrudge anybody that makes the big leagues and the fruits of their labor.
All right, we'll mark this down. You did not give us a good minor league story.
I did not, but I owe you one. I owe you one or two.
You filibustered us a little, but that's okay. By the way, once you become skipper, and I know you don't see Kershaw on this trip, but do you guys have the Kershaw book? Like, where's the secret Cardinals how to get to Kershaw in the seventh inning book? Do you now have the keys to that you have the secret codes, the launch codes to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's organizational property.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, good. We keep it with them. We're pretty inclusive here within the organization.
All right. Congrats on the win at Chavez Ravine. I'm sure that one felt good, watching two balls go out of the yard off Kenley Jansen. Enjoy the victory lap. We'll see you tonight, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug. Have a blessed day. Appreciate you.
All right. That's Mark Shield, who, of course, longtime minor league skipper, interim manager, and, I mean, you think about it, at their bottom. At their bottom, they were a 500 team, right? They're 51-51, and you look up now, and they're 69-57.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Did you guys see this Baker Mayfield underwear endorsement advertisement? Did you see this, Ryan Music? I mean, Ryan, would you wear these PSD? Oh, he's on the phone. Ramos, would you wear PSD drawers? Have you seen this advertisement?
I have not, but are they shorts?
No, they're underwear.
Yeah, I would wear. Are they briefs or are they boxers?
They're boxer briefs, I believe.
I would wear those. Yes.
Okay, but you haven't seen this picture?
I haven't seen. I would wear boxer briefs.
No, no, I don't mean the picture of the actual underwear. Okay. I mean, have you?
No.
Have you seen the ad?
Let me say, before I say yes or no to anything, I have not seen the ad. So
okay, the ad doesn't actually show. It just shows the band to the boxers.
Okay.
But it's Baker Mayfield, headband, beard, no shirt, kind of farmer tan, band of underwear. Then he's got some jeans, and then what appears to be Nike Air Max. He's sitting, he's standing and leaning on a Rolls Royce that have some killer suicide doors. People who don't know, suicide doors, the doors that open the opposite way. And then in front of him is a Bengal tiger, just kind of like laying there at attention. And I get that everybody's freaking out, like, well, he hadn't even thrown a touchdown pass yet. He's not even starting yet. It's like, what are we doing here? What exactly are we doing? Why can't I think Baker Mayfield was good enough to be the number one pick? No. Do I think he's a little cocky? Sure. I will tell you, you better be a little bit cocky if you're going to be 6 feet tall and be a two-time walk-on and make it to being a Heisman Trophy winner and then become the number one overall pick. Like, you better think your you-know-what doesn't stink because everybody else thinks it does. Does. So I don't know. I'm just not bothered by it. I don't. I think it's kind of cool. Somebody says, like, hey, man, do you want to sell some underwear? Yeah, you know what? I really don't want to pose in my underwear. No, 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 no. Don't worry about it. We're just going to show the underwear band. Cool. What do I got to do? I don't know. We'll come up with a photo shoot. Here's our idea. Here's our idea. We're going to put you in front of a Rolls Royce and next to a tiger. And you're like, and what do I got to do? Nothing. Just stand there. We'll make you look good. Okay. We're going to give you a lot of money and we're going to make you look good. Like, I fail to see the downside of it. Like, well, this is like Johnny Manziel. Like, no, it's not. Like, dude, Johnny Manziel was out partying all the time. Have you seen any videos or anything of Baker Mayfield partying? Have we ever seen Baker Mayfield rolling up a $20 bill walking in a bathroom? Have we ever seen that? The only thing we have police video of him was that two off seasons ago or one off season ago in Arkansas. Like, look, the deal is now if he doesn't have get away from the cop speed, he doesn't have SEC speed. That's the one thing. But like, it was like public intox in Arkansas. Like, come on, man, really? So I don't know. Music, have I suddenly become like the most liberal guy on earth or something? And all of you guys have become conservative curmudgeons, but I kind of think the picture's cool.
You think it's cool?
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I don't think it's...
He's selling underwear.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I just think it's one of those things where it's not a great look for where he's at. Like, we don't even know when he's going to start. Let alone when he may or may not actually be a legitimate NFL quarterback. And so if he can play, sure, it's great. And it just helps add to his moxie and his profile overall. But it's one of those things where, look, if he goes out there in his first NFL game and he throws below 60% completion percentage and throws a couple of picks, that quickly becomes the poster that everyone wants to use against them, and it could sort of quickly become a snowball effect of everything you want to do to stack against him.
Okay, fine. But like, look, if he can't play, he can't play. If he can't play, he can't play. The poster has nothing to do with whether or not he can play.
It's just another one of those things where you're potentially giving more material for the quote-unquote haters to be pitted against you. And if it goes bad, it could go bad quickly. I mean, when we talk about confidence with the quarterback, that confidence can be quickly squashed by how many people may be out there rooting against him, especially using a picture like that.
But none of that matters. None of that matters if he can play.
But what if he's very borderline? Because you're making it sound like he either can play and he'll be great, or he can't play and it doesn't matter. But what if he's in the middle and he needs that confidence, or he can't handle the pressure of all of these
people?
But
he can. Like, look, like there's no, this is like, I mean, I don't know how many times we got into this with other athletes, It's like, well, Aaron Rodgers, well, you know, Aaron Rodgers couldn't lead the comeback that Tom Brady could against the Atlanta Falcons. Like, okay, well, Aaron Rodgers led a comeback against the Dallas Cowboys the week before, right? Like, he won a Super Bowl. He clearly can play under pressure. It's like, well, oh, now I'm in Atlanta. Now I'm down 28-3. Now I can't come back. Or his defense was just a total joke disaster. So I don't know. Somebody tells you, hey, dude, your agent calls you. Do you want to do an underwear ad? You know, I won't pose in my underwear. I just don't think that's a good thing. Like, no. You just wear jeans and no shirt and underwear. Like, okay. So they're going to do a photo shoot. Cool. I'm going to pay you X. Fine. Cool. And by the way, you get a percentage in the back end because they're going to sell ones with your number on it. No one on earth says no to that. No one. God, we got to get over ourselves. If he can't play, he can't play. The underwear ad is not going to be the reason he can't play.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's catch up with DJ Daniel Jeremiah. The podcast is out, is Move the Sticks. That's also the Twitter handle and the Instagram handle as well. You can see it on NFL Network. You can download it. And he's also an analyst for the LA Chargers radio broadcast. Daniel Jeremiah joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I want to start with last night. When I say Andrew Luck, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
It doesn't look the same. I hope that we get to see the guy that led that team to the playoffs several years in a row and had them knocking on the doorstep, but I don't know that he's – I don't see him right now, and we'll have to wait and see if that ends up being the case that we see the same guy. But I just – I just watching him throw the ball, I didn't think the ball had the same kind of life on it that it used to have and just didn't look like he was quite as comfortable. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hard on him, but that's not the Andrew Luck that I saw previously.
I think that's fair. Like, look, am I wrong? His first 3 years were as good as you could have hoped for from a quarterback, right?
It's the highest grade I've ever given to a quarterback since I started scouting in 2003. So his ability is off the charts, and we saw him carry a team, as a young player, which is very rare. But we'll see. Hopefully, we see that guy again.
So when I watched last night, I thought, here's what I thought. Here's the non-former personnel guy in a front office thoughts. I was like, I thought Joe Flacco was the best quarterback on the field. I think Jacoby Brissett is exactly what, he could be a spot starter and a pretty good pro. I thought Andrew Luck, it looked like Tiger Woods in February where, boy, he was really, really rusty, but he was also hurt by a bad offensive line and guys that nobody was really open, nor was he terribly accurate throwing them open. And then I thought Lamar Jackson looked like the fourth best quarterback on the field. Am I being too harsh?
No, they didn't really get him started the right way. We talked about this with Bucky today on the podcast, which was they didn't really get him some easy throws, kind of get going and didn't use a screen game, didn't get him on the move and just asked him to kind of hang back there in the pocket. And he's not going to be a purely accurate quarterback at this point in his career if you're going to ask him to do that. And I thought his eyes dropped a little bit, even though the protection wasn't great. I thought he was he just wasn't real comfortable. And so that, to me, I think when you play with Joe Flacco and you try and call the same plays and run the same offense with Lamar Jackson at this point in his career, you're not going to be successful. You got to script things a little bit differently for Lamar. So I just didn't think he looked comfortable. I think you could say watching that game with Luck, Brissett, Joe, and I would probably even put RG3, those guys looked more comfortable than what Lamar looked like last night.
Do you think he plays quarterback for the Ravens this season?
I've been, before we got to the preseason, Doug, I'd been predicting that we would see him at some point in time this year. Maybe it was the middle of the season. I don't know. I'm not so sure right now. It's just you haven't seen enough. And I haven't been there for practices, but in the preseason, it just looks like he's a long ways away, and they're going to have to really tailor the offense toward him. And, maybe the best thing about this selection of Lamar Jackson is it did kind of light a fire under Joe Flacco, because that is the best we've seen Joe Flacco look in quite some time.
Tend to agree with you. Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. It appears like it's a formality. Sam Darnold's going to win this job, right? Like he, but is that the smart play for them? They got Teddy Bridgewater, who has some value. You have Josh McCown, who's shown that he can be a little bit better than you think. And, you know, once you start Sam Darnold, you're not going to bench him. It's a bad offensive line, bad tight end play, average wide receivers, below average running backs. Is it the right thing to do?
I actually got into an argument. I wasn't like a serious argument, but a disagreement with a general manager in the league because we were just talking about this. And I said, just play him. You know, he's good at it. You got to get this kid experience. Let Sam get out there and learn from his mistakes. And that way you have him ready to go next year when you can go get some better pieces around him. He's mentally and physically tough. He'll be able to survive. He'll be able to survive some rocky moments here, you know, just get through it. And then he said, no, he said, look, you can brand a kid with one awful year. I don't know that I'd want to put that on him. This team is just not ready for a young quarterback at this point in time. So we disagreed. But I stick to my guns on that one. I think he'll be fine. There'll be some highs and lows, but he's such an even-keel kid. I think this experience will really benefit him going into next year.
Do you think Andrew Luck feels good about the experience he had those couple years of that terrible roster?
Well, they went to the playoffs. Darn near with an AFC championship game with no offensive line. So
Offensive line. We'll he had Reggie Wayne, 36-year-old Reggie Wayne was wide receiver two, right? Like, oy. Oy. And then it only got worse after that.
Well, I do say I do like this though, because some people on Twitter were giving Darnold a hard time for not throwing the ball down the field, and I'm like, dude, he's playing smart, and this is how he's going to survive this year. They're going to go 4 and 5 wide. They're going to spread people out. It's going to be catch, rock, and throw from the gun. It's going to get the ball out of his hands. It's going to save him.
Speaking of going empty and trying to find mismatches and short and underneath stuff. It feels like, with the exception of Tavon Austin, who the Cowboys are the only people on earth convinced they can make him into a wide receiver. What do you think what the Cowboys are doing with no real plan for like a number one, like a go-to guy, reworking the tight end position? There's a lot of something there, but outside of Zeke, they seem to be trying an ensemble cast. Do you like that?
Well, it's going to be an interesting experiment. I mean, one thing I will say, Michael Gallup looks really good. The rookie from Colorado State, he's going to be a good player for them. So that was a nice find for them in the draft. But I think the formula that they're going to use, Doug, is going to be very much a 90s formula, an old school formula, in that they're going to run the heck out of it. And then defensively, I think they've got a chance to be a little bit better than everybody thinks. You know, when you look at the linebackers that they've put in place there now, with Jalen Smith starting to really come around and look a little bit like the guy we saw at Notre Dame. You got DeMarcus Lawrence coming off the edge. Awuzie is really filling in nicely at corner. I think this defense with Rod Marinelli calling the shots could be actually pretty good, and that's going to be their formula. Just try and run the heck out of it, play good defense, shorten the game and find themselves in some low-scoring close games and hope that, you know, the good special teams can carry them.
It's going to be fascinating to see. You also obviously work and cover the Chargers. You saw the Seahawks up close and personal. Look, I think common perception is they lost the Legion of Boom. They haven't really fixed the offensive line. But my one thought is like, hey, these guys were the ones who drafted the Legion of Boom, right? So the idea that those big names are gone doesn't mean there's going to be that big a fall off. How big a fall off is there on that defensive side of the football?
Well, there's a lot of names that people just aren't going to be familiar with. I do think there is a drop-off, though. I mean, especially with Earl Thomas not being there. They've got good players. You know, if you're kind of looking at a pro grading scale, you know, they've got guys that are serviceable, solid starters. You know, that's good. But they had elite playmakers, you know, with those other guys. And I don't see those guys currently on this roster. So I think they're going to be good on defense. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I think they're going to play hard. Pete Carroll's teams always do on that side of the ball. I just don't know if they're going to get all those difference-making plays that we saw, you know, from the Michael Bennett's to Cliff Averill's, as well as that whole secondary. So that, to me, is definitely going to be a step down. And then offensively, I know they want to be more physical, and I do really like Chris Carson and his game, but the offensive line is left-handed for sure on the right side. That gives me a little bit of pause.
Yeah, and Chris Carson does have a tendency to get hurt, as he got hurt last year after earning the starting spot as a running back. Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. What about the Chargers? I've talked them up. They don't have Hunter Henry, but they got a litany of talented wide receivers. The offensive line seems to be good enough, and you're going to add Forrest Lamp at some point soon to give them some depth. The second-year player who missed his entire rookie season with a knee injury, what are your thoughts on the Chargers now that you've seen them play a couple preseason games?
Well, it's exciting. You know, I'm doing their games, getting a chance to see them up close. The personnel is really good. You know, you can look and try and be a little picky and say, okay, maybe defensive tackle, you know, getting a little more dynamic player in that spot. But they've got edge rushers. The speed they added in the draft with Uchenna Nwosu, who's been awesome from USC, as an outside linebacker. Kaiser White, who was a safety at West Virginia. They converted him to a linebacker. So they got a lot faster at linebacker. And then Derwin James. And I'll go out there to practice tomorrow, but I heard he's working with the first team this week. So getting him plugged in. I think it's got a chance to be, if not the best defense in the NFL, a top five defense to go along with Phillip Rivers and all they can do in the passing game. I mean, it looks good right now. They just need to, they can't afford any more injuries, stay healthy, but it's a good looking roster.
Okay, I don't know. Did you see the picture of the Baker Mayfield underwear advertisement?
I did. I saw two things of his today on social media. I saw that, and then I saw his impression of John Dorsey.
John Dorsey obviously chews gum with his mouth open. That was my big takeaway. I don't think he got the voice down yet.
Yeah.
I'd love to say I'm bothered, but like I'm not. Like, I yeah. Do you want to do an underwear ad? Yeah, I don't want to pose in my underwear. No. You have jeans on. We'll put you in a cool pose. Put you in front of a Rolls Royce with a tiger. It is a Bengal. He's a Brown. I don't know. Look, he's going to get some chops busted in the locker room. Is this a big deal?
I don't think so. You know, the funny thing, some dudes just have a tremendous amount of confidence. I mean, I go back to when John Gruden was in the People magazine as one of the sexiest men alive, and he went out to practice. He knew everybody was going to rib him. And he just said, hey, don't hate on me. You're just jealous. I'm just sexier than you are. You know, like you just kind of, there's certain guys with a personality, and Baker strikes me with that type of personality that guys will laugh with him. They won't laugh at him, and they'll kind of just go on.
It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. What do you think they do at quarterback?
Cleveland, I think, look, it sounds like it's all in on Tyrod, but there is, you know, for teams won one out of 32, expectations are actually pretty high. If they come out the gate and go, 1-3, 1-4, obviously celebrate that first win. It's been a minute, but I do think this whole it's a redshirt year for Baker Mayfield that can disappear real quick.
You think Buffalo pulls the trigger and plays the kid?
I think they're going to. I just think he's so much more talented than everybody else they've got at the position. So you can say, well, I don't know if this is the best thing for him long term. Same reasons we talked about with Sam Darnold in terms of what's around him. But, man, with the Jets, it's a decision to make the way Teddy's playing. And with McCown, there's no decision in Buffalo. He just clearly head and shoulders better than what they've got.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm fascinated by a couple of the teams that people haven't talked enough about. Daniel Jeremiah joining us, NFL Network. Move the Sticks is the podcast. Where are the Niners in their rebuild? I mean, we saw Jimmy G go 5-0 and beat three playoff teams. Granted, the Rams were mailing in week 17, but what are our expectations for the Rams? For the Niners here week two with that crew running things.
Well, I think McGlinchey looks like a hit so far. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, if you want offensive linemen, go shopping at Notre Dame in the Big Ten. Those guys have been pretty darn good. So you've got two good tackles there. You got a really good young quarterback in Garoppolo, and you got a great play caller. Now the question I have is just the playmakers. You know, is Marquise Goodwin gonna continue to evolve and grow and be that guy? I don't know. I still think they have work to do at some of those skill positions. But defensively, you know, they've got a pretty good looking front seven and some talent in the secondary as well. I mean, this could be kind of your sneaky, 12-13 win team. I think on the low end, you're talking about, I think I predict them to win nine or 10 games, but it wouldn't shock me if they did better than that.
Okay, what about the Miami Dolphins?
That's a tough one. I think their defense is going to be pretty good. Everything I've heard coming out of there all the way back to the spring was that Robert Quinn, it just fits beautifully into that scheme. So I think defensively, they're going to be able to get after the passer a little bit. They've got some, I love Xavier Howard in the secondary. Offensively, I'm still a little nervous there. So I think if you ask me right now, I think the Jets, I think first place is obviously the Patriots, fourth place is the Bills, and I think you're looking at Miami and the Jets kind of jostling for second place, and that probably puts you in that 9-win area.
If you were to play a game on paper or with a computer, and you said, all right, do you need a running back? How about the guy who led the league in rushing? Do you need somebody to take the top off the defense? How about the fastest guy in the NFL? You got a tight end, Travis Kelce. He's a top five, whatever.
Yeah.
Then you got Sammy Watkins. Well, I think they overpaid, but like, look, I get his why he was acquired. And then you need somebody who could make all the throws. They found a guy and redshirted him to make all the throws. And you need a coach who has shown the ability to motivate guys, get them to win. Like, Kansas City seems to be a team that you check every box. But, man, I feel like as much as rewards as they're going to be those 70-yard touchdown passes, I do feel like there's going to be some risk there in some of those throws. And as we know, turnovers is the biggest determinant of who wins in any sport, especially the NFL. What are your thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs?
They're going to score a bunch of points, and just looking at it, it's just the S's. They've got speed, they've got skill, and they've got scheme. Those are three good things. And then, you mentioned on Mahomes, they traded in the efficiency of Alex Smith for the explosiveness of Mahomes, but with that's going to come some turnovers. So I think they're going to score a bunch of points. There's going to be a bunch of yards, and I think there's going to be some of those turnovers that are going to cost them some games. And then I just don't know defensively. It's just not, I don't know, it's not a great group. So that to me would be a little bit of a concern. Some of the resources they've taken from that side of the ball to kind of build up this offense. I definitely think they have a top five offense in the league, but I do think the turnovers will get them a little bit. And I think that defensive personnel is a little bit worrisome.
Do you think that's a reaction to some of the rule changes and that the league is going offense as opposed to defense?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to teams around the league that said the team that just won the Super Bowl, I mean, did you watch the Super Bowl? They gave up 600 yards and won the game. So, my counter-argument to that was, yeah, but they ended up winning the game because Brandon Graham made a play late in the game. So you still got to have some playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, but there's definitely a sense around the league of, hey, let's load up on offense the way the rules are, the way the game's set up right now. Just go outscore everybody.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, LA Chargers. Move the Sticks is the podcast. Follow him on Twitter and on Instagram, or follow him to San Diego when he drives home from work. Thanks so much for joining us, DJ.
Thanks, buddy.